McElroy has his masterpiece.
Yes, at the end of an incredible Masters with golf immortality awaiting, it was Rory McIlroy, the golfing prodigy from Hollywood, Northern Ireland, who finally, in the most dramatic of ways, secured a place in the game's most elite class of champions. With thanks to the great Jim Nance and CBS Sports, we welcome you to a special roundtable recap of the 89th Masters Tournament here on Musings on Golf. I'm Kelly Elbin, and along with my partner, Bob Bupka, who provided 39 Masters reports over 5 days for TalkSport in the United Kingdom. I'm exhausted just saying that. We are delighted to be joined by our good buddy, Adam Shupak, senior writer for Golf Week, who has covered every Masters since 2009. Okay, Robert, I'll start with you now that you've had a little time to rest, recuperate, reflect. How do you properly sum up the 2025 Masters?
Well, I'd like to begin by asking Adam a question, because I don't know the answer. It was inevitable that he was going to win a Masters, but does that make it easier or harder if it's inevitable?
Well, I dispute the fact that it was inevitable, because, I mean, I think if he does not win this one on Sunday, he never wins it. I think he becomes a Tibetan monk. He's in the witness protection program. We never see from this guy again. I don't think there's any way. There would have been so much scar tissue. And, you know, we said Ernie Els was going to win a Masters. We said Johnny Miller, it's inevitable. He's going to win the Masters. There's a whole bunch of guys that it seemed like they were locks to do it, but they couldn't get it done. And the pressure each year, I was under the tree talking with Scott Van Pelt, and I thought he had, I think he might have used this on TV, so I'm going to give him credit for it. But he said it was every year was like another pebble on the scale. And you know, it just kept getting heavier. And, you know, I think the burden, he talked about it afterwards, that burden every year of coming back there, having to answer all the questions. And I think we got to see all of it play out in real time, and that's what made this so special.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more, Adam. You know, calling it special probably is not even doing justice. I mean, special doesn't begin to describe the drama, the excitement, the ups, the downs. I mean, we never knew in which direction it was going to go, because Rory would do something great, then he'd do something bad. I mean, it was, if you wrote the script, Hollywood would kick it back saying, nobody's going to believe that story.
Right. I'll throw a question back to you guys, because you've been, you covered a lot more than I have. Is this the greatest one you guys ever saw?
Boy, I never thought I'd say yes to that. I mean, obviously, my big one was 1986, Jack winning that six-screen jacket. I never thought I'd see a better Masters. Well, I have.
And Adam, first of all, welcome to Musings on Golf. It's great to have you. I will answer your question by saying, to me it is, and in large part because we're not only going to talk about Rory today, but we had so many cast of characters here, particularly with Bryson DeChambeau. When you look at Tiger winning in 2019, it was still him. And yes, I know the onus was on Rory, but you had his perfect foil in Bryson playing with him in that final group. And on top of that, the drama and the craziness from the third round on Saturday. I mean, back-to-back days, I don't know that I've ever witnessed anything like the Saturday and Sunday we just saw at Augusta National.
It was the best Saturday ever, and you don't even remember it now because Sunday was so much better.
I've got to ask you, you wrote, we talked about Bob doing 39 reports. You wrote and wrote and wrote so well in covering this Masters. You've been there every year since 2009. And I was really intrigued by what I thought was just a terrific story that you wrote, very much an insider story. You were literally in the clubhouse at Augusta National on Sunday. Some of the members there, media and so forth. Can you kind of take us into that? How does that work with media, first of all, allowed access into the clubhouse, and you're watching it with Mark Steinberg, Tiger's agent, some members, media? How does that work, and what was that vibe like?
Well, I was out there walking the course with the final pairing. Knew this was going to be a something special, and I had to see it. But it was so hard. It was so difficult. As many of your listeners know, but if they don't, it's the one tournament really that the media can't be inside the ropes. So we're out there, just like any regular patron, just struggling to see, crane our neck. You kind of need binoculars and you need some help. And so after, I set up right behind the 10th tee. I wanted to see how Rory handled that tee shot at 10, and he hit a beautiful one, and everybody was clapping. And I saw Fred Perpell, the U.S. former past USGA president, slapping five with his friend next to him. And everybody felt like that was a huge moment. And I walked down all the way to 12, and once he made that par 12, I thought, this thing felt over. And I'm not seeing it. I couldn't see anything really. So I walked back in and headed to go in the clubhouse. And the Augusta National, they still have a lot of reverence for the media and respect our role. And they know that, giving us some access to things like that, we can still go in the locker room at Augusta and talk to players there if we want to. So went into the clubhouse. I remember watching Adam Scott win the playoff. I was standing next to Lynn Swann. I'm a big Steelers fan. I didn't even know it. I was so focused on the golf until like the last minute when we're like high-fiving each other. So, that's kind of become a bit of a spot where a lot of times you could see the family. Did not realize that that Jerry and Rory's mother weren't there, that they're back in Ireland. I thought we might find them watching things inside, or there'd be some people. There's traditionally some family or some people that, you're getting some insight of how they're celebrating the moment. And so kind of set up shop where I could see the TV, but kind of stay enough out of the way of the people in there. And as you mentioned, Mark Steinberg, that was one of the real interesting ones. He was camped out inside watching the coverage. And when Rory hit the ball in the water at 13, and then almost simultaneously, Justin Rose's client rolls in the putt at 16, and they're all of a sudden they're tied. Mark Steinberg, who was drinking a Diet Coke, got up, went to the bar, and ordered a vodka cranberry from Steven the bartender. And I think he just needed a baby to calm his nerves. He only had like a sip or two, and eventually left the drink there on the table to go out to meet Rosie when he was finishing up. But I thought that spoke volumes to me of what was going on. It was like everybody needed a stiff drink at that point.
And with the exception of Mark, was the general feeling, hey, this is the coronation of Rory that we've long awaited for among the members themselves?
Yes, there was a strong, they wanted Rory in the club feel in there. They were really pulling for him, none more so, and for good reason than John Carr, who's from Ireland, and the Carr family. Joe Carr's, I guess he's his son, but Marty Carr and the whole family are just so huge in the golf world. And I think there was when he hit this great shot at 15, he pounded his chest. That was a pretty cool moment to see. You could tell how much that mattered to him there. And it was they were when he hit that shot, I also remember somebody saying, "All is forgiven," but there was still more to come. It was pretty special, pretty great
Well,
vibe.
and Robert, there was a lot more to come, and Adam mentioned the almost inexplicable the third shot into the, as it turned out, into Ray's Creek on 13. We had Dr. Bob Rotella on a few weeks ago, actually right after Rory won the Players Championship, and Rory had credited him. And Bob, I've got to believe, I heard Rory talking about staying in his little cocoon, right? I have to believe that the Rotella effect helped, to what degree, I'm not sure, but it could have been to a very big degree, helped this guy finally get over the finish line and get that Masters title.
Well, the important thing, guys, is it doesn't matter what help. Did this help? Did that help? We got the job done. I shouldn't say that. Rory got the job done. To be perfectly candid, one of the greatest masters ever, and probably will remain that way for a long, long time.
Yeah, I agree. And Adam, I the shot at 13, obviously the bogey or the bogey at 18, it's really struck by his resiliency. I mean, the Adam, the not just on Sunday, but the shot, the back-to-back shots on 13 on Saturday and Sunday, and the incredibly terrific approach at 17 on Sunday for birdie. He yeah, the ebbs and flows were absurd. But man, he hit some incredibly great golf shots.
You're right. One of the shot of 15, I think, is going to go down as one of the great shots in Masters lore. And it just was such a battle, internal, external battle. The fact, like you said earlier, that he was going up against Bryson, who had vanquished him at the U.S. Open, although it felt more self-inflicted by Rory missing those putts late. And I think he just got tight. I think he got the lead a little too early there, and he had so much trouble. Even the double bogey on the first hole on Sunday, he talked about how it calmed his nerves. But to lose the lead so quickly, I mean, it looked like this was going the wrong way early. And then he's up four at the turn. Is he going to win by eight like he and won other majors? And then all of a sudden, he gets through some of the toughest things, having to hit the tee shot at 10 after. 2011, when it looked like at the as a young 21-year-old, he's going to do Tiger Woods like things. He had pasted up Tiger's scorecard from the final round in '97 in his bedroom, and had talked as a kid at 8, 9 years old about how he dreamed of winning majors and chipping it in the laundry, his
Yeah,
washing machine.
in the washing machine. Yeah,
I mean, we this kid is. This is what he, little kid from Hollywood, who had a big dream, and to finally make it happen, it took everything. It took, and he took every shot. It exposed every weakness in his game, and to have the mental fortitude after missing that putt on 18 to regroup, and hit the shot that he hit in the playoff, it just shows, it showed a lot of his character, and so well deserved. He had to hit it close because, man, he couldn't make anything on Sunday.
Hey, and we'll hear from Rory. We've got a good audio in just a second. But Adam, just a follow-up. He was very open in terms of talking about that it was really a battle within himself on Sunday. But I as he also said, it's been a battle within himself at that tournament for a long time. I mean, that's a tremendous onus to have on oneself for such an extended period of time. And letting all that out, when he talked about that pent-up emotion after making that 3.5 footer on 18 on the 73rd hole, it was way, way more of relief, it seemed like, than
Sure.
joy.
Yeah, and we haven't even talked about the career Grand Slam yet. I mean, this is he's on the Mount Rushmore now. That is like one of the great clubs in all of sports, but definitely for golf. He becomes the sixth player to achieve that accomplishment. I mean, I think of it as five. Gene Sarazen didn't even know what it was. I mean, Ben Hogan was when it wasn't really a thing yet when he's doing this. It's really Tiger's really the only guy who's done it in my lifetime. So to do something, to see history like that, and to have that pressure every year for 11 straight years to come back to Augusta National and answer all those questions, and you add in the fact that he hadn't won a major in so long. When he won his fourth, Brooks Koepka had zero, and now Koepka had passed him with five. So and all the close calls, so many, in the last, so much heartbreak the last few years. And he said he would go through 100 of those Sundays to win one again. And it's like he went through 100 of those Sundays in 19 holes on Sunday. It showed I admire the way he kept getting off, getting back up, dusting himself off. There's a Japanese proverb, fall down seven times, get up eight, get up for that eighth, and that's what he just kept doing. The fact that he's able to get it done, we're gonna remember this one for as long as we live.
Ah, that's terrific. All right, we have an extended audio clip from Rory worth listening to. Great stuff. Let's hear that.
It's a dream come true. I've dreamt about that moment for as long as I can remember. Watching Tiger here in 1997 do what he did and winning his first green jacket, I think that inspired so many of my generation to want to emulate what he did. And there were points in my career where I didn't know if I would have this nice garment over my shoulders, but I certainly didn't make it easy. I was nervous. It was one of the toughest days I've ever had on the golf course. In a funny way, I feel like the double bogey at the first sort of settled my nerves. A complete roller coaster of a day. It was very tricky out there. It almost felt more like a US Open than a Masters at some points, just with how firm and fast the greens got. But yeah, just really proud of how I bounced back from the double on one, from the double on 13. But yeah, just a complete roller coaster of emotions today. And honestly, what came out of me on the last green there in the playoff was at least 11 years, if not 14 years of pent-up emotion. It's been 14 long years, but thankfully I got the job done.
No, Adam, I had the good pleasure when I was with the PGA of America. I actually sat next to Rory when he won his last major championship at Valhalla in 2014, handling the interviews. And I was struck then, Adam, and I'm struck now by the candor of the guy, the upfront nature of the guy. He is as worthy a champion in so many ways as anyone I've ever been around in the world of golf.
Yeah, he shows his vulnerabilities to us. He's as relatable a player as we've had in a long time because we've seen him in both his highs and lows. In a way that Tiger, we never really we have seen Tiger with some of his heartache, with some of his injuries, and some of the off the course stuff that he's had to deal with. But Rory lets us in a way that none of the other great champions really have in a long time. He's got such great self-awareness. I on Tuesday he talked about how there was a period of time in that 2014 to now when he felt like maybe he didn't even want he wanted to win, but he wasn't willing to put it all in, put his heart out there, kind of like someone who went after a breakup doesn't really want to fall in love for a while. But then he got back into it kind of around 2019, and he's had so many close calls. I think everyone's seeing the heartache, seeing him, cry leaving St. Andrews, where he wanted to win at one of the cathedrals of the game, and put his stamp and have that be part of his legacy, and leaving in a golf cart with crying on the shoulder of his wife. See that hurt. Just some of the words that he spoke. Even some of the stuff in the Netflix video where we saw
Yeah.
the pain that he felt, and then driving away from the 2024 US Open without talking to the media, and going to New York City, and putting in his head his AirPods, and just trying to get lost, and just be as try to get over that hurt that he was feeling. It's all very relatable, and I felt like the patrons, initially it felt very split between. There were a lot of Bryson fans out there. He's an extremely popular player these days. It felt a little like Tiger and Phil 2001, where a lot of people wanted Phil to win that first Masters, and a lot of people also wanted to see history of Tiger. But as Bryson fell away, I mean, the patrons, just the power of their support, I wrote, felt like it could charge the entire city grid of Augusta, because they were willing, as best they could, Rory to victory. It was a pretty cool moment.
Well, unlike Rory on Sunday, we're off to a great start here on Musings on Golf, recapping the 2025 Masters. We'll have a lot more to talk about in a minute, including Bryson's struggles on Sunday, Scottie's defense of his Masters title, and Justin Rose coming up short in yet another Masters playoff. You'll hear all of that right after these messages from our corporate partners, William and Harry and Titleist. Our friends at William and Harry are always looking for ways to stand out in the crowd. So for anyone who belongs to a country club, William and Harry can have your shoes private labeled to fit your specific needs. The same applies to your company or any organization you might be affiliated with. This makes you a clear winner. Why? Well, you have a better quality shoe that feels great, and you have the logo of your club, company, or organization on your shoes that really makes you stand out on the golf course. To learn more, visit williamandharry.com today and be sure to input our promotional code 15OFF, M-O-G, for a 15% discount at williamandharry.com.
Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X are the best performing, most consistent in the game. So how does the best get better? You start by listening to the best players in the world. You experiment, iterate, validate. You trust the best process to create the best golf ball the game has ever known. The all-new Pro V1 and Pro V1X. More speed off the tee. More control with your irons. More spin with your wedges. And more opportunity to shoot your lowest scores.
Well, we're delighted to have Adam Shupak of Golf Week, who covered his 17th Masters last week, here on a Musings on Golf Masters Recap Roundtable. Adam is also the author of Dean Beaman, Golf's Driving Force, the story of the former PGA Tour commissioner. All right, the other guy in the group on Sunday who had the lead, right, in that final pairing after two holes, DeChambeau. He is his own force, right? I mean, it's amazing, Adam, how he has redefined himself, his personality, his persona, his body. Obviously struggled on Sunday. I think he hit a lot of shots left. He was struggling, but what are your thoughts? I'm interested from a standpoint of covering him. What's he like to cover? And were you surprised that things did in fact get away from him on Sunday afternoon?
Yeah, he's been much more willing to, I think he's figured out how to converse with us in a better way. Cause there was a time where he was fighting himself, and, you know, he said some things that he, I'm sure, regrets. That, I mean, think about saying that Augusta National's a par 67. I think that really humbled him. He'd been slapped in the face in the years to follow. And you know, I thought the way he played last year showed that he maybe turned a corner at Augusta. And I asked this at a pre-tournament media call with Brandel Champlain. He's like, nope, this course doesn't fit him. He's all of, you know, he's linear and Augusta National is abstract, and which is a great line. But, you know, then he goes out and he's chipping and putting like Seve out there. And that, I think that was a bit of it. I think Bryson alluded to that this was a little bit of smoke and mirrors. He really was struggling with his iron game. There's a reason. I mean, he always hits a lot of balls, but he hit over 1,000 balls at the practice range. They kept count of that this year. And I think that was something like 700 more than Rory hit. So, you know, he was really searching for something with his iron play. And, you know, just had an incredible putting day on Saturday. I mean, he must have made close to 200 feet of putts with a couple bombs. I thought he might figure something out overnight, and he hit balls till, you know, under the floodlights, and supposedly ended up hitting some putts and chips at someone's backyard I really, you know, my head said Bryson's gonna get this done. I just thought, you know, this guy has figured out the majors formula. You know, he had pressure too. This would have been number three, and I think he's in the Hall of Fame, and I think something like that really would have mattered to him, and he wants to be in this club at Augusta National just as bad as Rory. You know, I think he tried some gamesmanship, showing up to the tee at the big last time. Minute. I think he was trying to get, and it was interesting, you know, he made the comment that Rory didn't talk to him all day, although, you know, it looks like they did have a nice moment on the first tee, and people kind of were forgetting about that. But, you know, I think that might have been a tactic that Rory picked up from Tiger. And you know, I remember Tony Finau being like, wow, Tiger's not even going to talk to me today. You know, in 2019 when they played together, Tony Finau, the nicest guy in the world, and you got the icy stare from Tiger. And And, you know, it was such a different vibe between those two guys. You know, Bryson's trying to play up, get the fans to,
Oh, yeah.
you know, on his, you know, to get them supporting him. And just such a contrast between those two, how they go about what they do. And, you know, I was surprised. You know, I actually, I talked to Mike Shy the night before, and he said 2 and 3, those are two holes that Bryson's really struggled with, three more than anything. He was really impressed that Bryson showed some maturity and laid up on Saturday with the iron. And so to see,
Adam, is Mike his coach? Who's Mike?
they're sorry, Mike Shy, his former coach.
Yeah,
They're
sorry. Yeah.
but and so it's been spent knows him better than anybody. But no longer, they're no longer together. It's a whole separate story. But you know, I saw Padraig Harrington saying it was really bizarre that he didn't hit driver. I was, you know, that 3 putt I think really hurt. I think that was a big turning point. Another 2-stroke swing after, you know, the first hole. All of a sudden, the lead of Rory's is gone when he makes double with his 3 putt, and then played a pretty poor second hole, and Bryson makes birdie there, and Bryson's got the lead, and for him to lose the lead that quickly, I thought was really surprising. And I thought when he's on in 2 there at 3, he's going to get through this hole, and you know, he might be off to the races. Instead, he 3 putts that. Rory made the one big putt of the day for him.
Huge
A
putt.
nice, yeah. It was kind of in that length that I think he's good at. But that was a big moment there, big turning point. And you know, Bryson just was fighting a swing. His iron play finally caught up to him, and just made too many mistakes. But he still felt like if he could have put it on at 15, I mean, he could have been right back in it.
Yeah, no, the chances were there. You know this in covering the PGA Tour and the major championships. There's so many talented young players, and we're focusing obviously a lot on DeChambeau. Ludvig Åberg, I mean, his demeanor, his play, everything about him is so likable and easy. He's kind of like a couples to me in a way of the just this smooth, easy golf swing. Second last year in the Masters, hell man, he was tied for the lead with Rory coming back to the field, kind of, you know, sputtered with that what triple on or the bogey with the triple on 17. But is it just a matter of time? It sure seems like it before this guy not only wins one major, wins a lot. I mean, I just sense this guy is at a very high level at a very young age.
I think he's the next new number one. I mean, Rory might get back to number one if he can keep this up this year. But I think, you know, I look at Ludwig as the guy who Scotty's probably thinking about as is coming after him. You know, the way he showed he can win some big events with what he did at the Genesis Invitational at Torrey Pines this year. Had a
Yeah.
great back nine, and it was a huge charge. I thought he was going to be the guy to steal it. As he started making that rally, and you know, he was right there, and I think, you know, probably left with a bitter taste in his mouth. The triple was, you know, cost him some money in FedEx Cup points, but he probably knows that, you know, if he doesn't, if he can make that par at 17, he had
Oh, yeah.
every chance in the world to win this thing.
Oh, no question. Cost him, as it turned out, Adam, about $500,000. But at Augusta National,
Rounding error,
we don't
rounding
talk
error.
about the money, right? And it's, hey, you mentioned Scottie Scheffler. You know, had won two of the last three Masters going in. He had that. I don't know what it is with him. You know, he had the cut on the hand on Christmas Day. He just hasn't won yet. Okay, and yeah, he finished what, 3 shots out. Adam, he never seemed to be a serious threat to win this year. And I'm wondering from your perspective, what's up with Scottie Scheffler? Where is he right now?
I think Scotty's going to be just fine. I mean, he's probably not going to win 9 times this year again, but
Yeah.
you know, that the bar was set really high. And I think, you know, injury, parenthood, just some of the life changes he's having to deal with that. I think it, you know, he's gotten off to a little bit of more of a slow start, but I think his game is just still the best out there. His iron play, his I think he's starting, if he can get the putter going, which I think he will. I think he's made great leaps and bounds in his puttings in the last year or so. I like the putter he's working with, the grip change, everything that he's been doing. I feel like he's got two Masters. It's time for him to win, and start going towards. I think he's got a career Grand Slam potential, even though he's only got one leg of it so far. He's young enough and he's great enough, and I think he's got a game for all seasons.
Bob, when you talk about classy individuals on the PGA Tour, Justin Rose is at the very top of the list. Unfortunately for him, he's now been the victim, if you will, in the last two playoffs at the Masters, losing to Sergio and then losing Sunday to Rory. He seems like, Bob, though, if anybody's going to rebound from this, it's Justin Rose.
Good observation there, Kelly. I mean, Justin Rose is as classy as they come. I remember back 92 when he holes out at the Open Championship, automatically turns pro the next day. Everybody thought it was premature, but certainly it proved to be the right thing. Justin Rose, quite frankly, is as good as it gets in professional golf.
Adam, you agree with that view that Bob has in terms of his resiliency and being able to rebound?
Yeah, coming back from, was it 23 missed cuts to start his career and to become, he's a borderline Hall of Famer. I think even though he didn't win on Sunday, I think it still helps his case. That's now his fifth runner-up in a major. Second time he's lost in a playoff, his sudden death playoff at the Masters. He's so close, and really, if he wins that thing, it's going to go down as one of the greatest Sundays in Masters for him. 10 birdies, 8 in the last 12 holes. But he's got to look at himself and say, "Ah, I missed the big putt on set. I needed that putt on 17. I probably win it if I make that putt on 17." Although I think Rory probably makes the putt on 18 if he had to force a playoff. I think we're going to still have a playoff, but that's neither here nor there. I think his resume is impressive when you think of the 2013 U.S. Open. Since then, getting he hasn't added that second major, but the first Olympics, the return of golf in 2016. He got to world number one, FedEx Cup champion, Ryder Cup hero. The guy's kind of done checked every box. It just needs to get to multiple majors to really get into another class. And I feel for him because he was so close, and you wonder how many more chances. He's 44. This guy works as hard as anybody. I wrote about this a few years ago and brought it back up again this week. He has his own recovery room, his own like mini gym that he travels. Some guys have a sleep in a Parker. But he's converted one into a gym and a recovery room where he's got cold plunge and does all sorts of treatment to keep himself, able to still compete against these young bucks. And he's doing a pretty darn good job. Finished second as well at the British Open. So last two majors, he's been the runner up. And can he knock on the door again? I don't know. But it was really cool to see him. And I thought he also had enough perspective to be like, this was to say to Rory when they finished, "I'm just glad I got to be on this green and be part of this." I thought that was a really admirable way to explain it, because I'm sure there's some hurt that, man, this happened to me again twice. I lose to birdie on 18 here. I'm sure he hates that hole.
Although he did roll in a great putt on the
He did.
72nd hole to
He
get there.
did.
Okay, guys, final question for both of you. Now we're a month out from the PGA Championship at Quail Hollow Club, where Rory McIlroy has won four times in PGA Tour events. Bob, let me start with you. Might we very well be looking at the 2025 season starting off with Rory McIlroy winning the first two majors of the year?
Don't see why not. I mean, the burden that has been lifted from the shoulders of Rory McIlroy is incredible, and it's a marvelous gift that he presented to golf fans everywhere. Everyone was delighted about Rory McIlroy finally winning the Grand Slam.
Adam, from your perspective, you agree with that in terms of him having a clearly almost an upper hand, if you will, going into the Quail Hollow.
Yeah, he's an ATM machine at that place.
Yeah.
4 wins already at Quail, and I think getting, you know, the monkey off his back, the King Kong gorilla, should free him up. It may be some pressure to think, what can he do now? But I mean, things set up for could be a Rory slam with the players this year. I mean, that's crazy to think. But, you know, he's nearly won the U.S. Open the last couple of years. I think Oakmont sets up great for a bomber like him. And then we go to Royal Portrush, where he shot 61 once. Back in the homeland, he'll have so much support. That it didn't work out the first time they played a major there in 2019, but you know, to think of him having a chance to do something special there, I think the major season sets up extremely well for him. That would be, you know, we already got to write some history, but man, it would be fun to write even more history. I think one of the coolest things was when Jordan Spieth won the first two legs and then was in the down to the last hole at St. Andrews in 2015.
Yeah, and as you both alluded to, the psychology of having that burden lifted, he's got to be his mind, Adam, now can't be in any better spot than it's been for a long time. The freedom that comes with having that green jacket is immense for him, right?
I think so. I think so. One thing I wanted to bring up before we go is hugs. I thought a lot about hugs that day. There was a great hug with his daughter, great hug with his caddy. And then I think back to 2011 when Peter Costas for CBS had to go ask him if he'd do an interview. And Rory said to him, you know, right now I need a hug. And so that Peter Costas gave him a hug. And you think of the difference of that hug versus Shane Lowry, like the bear hug and lifting him off the air. And just everybody was hugging him over by scoring, to the point that Rory finally backed away and said, "Hey, I got to go get a jacket."
And everybody laughed. It was a great line, wasn't it?
Everybody, yeah. You know, and then the other great laugh going to switching over to laughs was he came into the press conference and said, "Guys, I want to start with my own question. What are we going to write about next year?" And, you know, maybe we'd be writing about him going for his fifth in a row.
Yeah.
Nah.
Absolutely.
Can't happen. Too big.
Hey, Adam Shupak of Golf Week, we thank you so much for your time. I know you're in Hilton Head for the event this week. The bandwagon never stops, right? It just keeps rolling, doesn't it?
Yeah. Signature event, big points, lots of money, and always a great venue. The vibe's so different here. Very laid back week, but now that, you know, it's not as laid back as it used to be because there's $20 million purse on the line. So this become a bigger one than it used to be.
Adam Shupak, thanks so much for joining us. Bob and I are going to have some final thoughts on the 2025 Masters right after these messages from William and Harry and Titleist. Just like you, I want to look good and perform at my best on the golf course. And that's exactly why I wear the new WH golf shoes from William and Harry, and you should too. Folks, I love these golf shoes. They're made of deer skin and calf skin. They've got a soft gel insert, and the reinforced hardened soft spikes increase stability and balance. And I got to tell you, they are so incredibly comfortable. So head on over to williamandharry.com to check out the new WH golf shoe. Look your best, play your best with William and Harry.
Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X are the best performing, most consistent in the game. So how does the best get better? You start by listening to the best players in the world. You experiment, iterate, validate. You trust the best process to create the best golf ball the game has ever known. The all-new Pro V1 and Pro V1X. More speed off the tee, more control with your irons, more spin with the wedges, and more opportunity to shoot your lowest scores.
Hey, Bob, it's great to have Adam Shupak with us. I know you guys go back a long ways, and great writer, Adam. And boy, he works hard. He's on, as we said, he's at Hilton Head this week. You talk about a guy on the scene in covering the PGA Tour and the major championships. It's Adam Shupak.
Yeah, nobody any better, and not only very brilliant in his writing. He's a nice guy, and golf fans love him everywhere, and you can't get any better than that.
You know, I thought we'd close, Bob, with a thought or two. And for me personally, I would imagine, I don't know how you were, but I would imagine I was among many, that it was a very emotional victory, whether you were there in person, but even watching on TV for Rory McIlroy, just the person that I've gotten to know a little bit and the way he's conducted himself and handles himself. And as I said, the resiliency, heck, at the end, I popped a bottle of champagne and toasted him, because it does get him into up on the mountaintop, Bob. And he did so in such an emotional, dramatic way that it was compelling theater to reach the mountaintop that he's now, and the group that he's now with.
I couldn't agree more, Kelly. I'm calling it the Masters Master. I mean, they'll never, you know, I hate saying never, because you don't think there's going to be anyone any better. I thought the 86 Masters win by Jack would never be topped, but it certainly has been by Rory McIlroy and his final leg of that Grand Slam. Congratulations, Rory. Thank you, Rory, for golf fans everywhere. You have been a wonderful thing to the sport of golf, and we really appreciate you.
Well, I agree. And as we close, the crowds, the patrons at Augusta National were uplifted by him. The television ratings were the best since 2018 because of his story. And as we close, congratulations to Rory McIlroy, the 2025 Masters champion and the sixth member of the career Grand Slam, joining Gene Sarazen, Ben Hogan, Jack Nicklaus, Tiger Woods, and Gary Player. Signing off for my major champion, Bob Bupka, Kelly Elbin, thanks for listening to a very special Musings on Golf.